Hi, this is Carrie Brownstein.
This is DJ Premier.
This is Darren Aronofsky.
You got the RZA right here.
Rose McGowan.
Right here. Ahead.
Aisha Tyler.
A Tribe Called Quest.
Fred Armisen.
Fritz Paul.
Javier Munoz. Seth Meyers.
Frankie Cosmos.
Flying Lotus.
Hi, we're Chaim. And you're listening to the Talk House Podcast. Ow!
Hello and welcome to the Talk House Podcast. I'm Josh Modell. On this week's episode, we've got the ringleader of the year's weirdest experimental hip-hop album, who also happens to be a well-known comedian, along with two guys who helped him make it, James Acaster, along with Namdi and Kwale Chris. Now, Acaster isn't a household name in the States just yet, but he's definitely a known quantity in the UK, where he's from. He's a stand-up comedian, a TV presenter, and an author. He wrote a great memoir a few years back called Perfect Sound Whatever, which uses music as a starting point for telling his own story. Which all sort of brings us to his musical project, which he calls Temps. Before his comedy career took off, Acaster was an aspiring musician, and he jumped back into that pursuit during the pandemic, creating a collective of over 40 contributors to make an album called Party Gator Purgatory. It's a wild mix of experimental hip-hop with rock and jazz elements, and it's chaotic in all the right ways. For this conversation, we put Acaster together with two of the guests he brought on to help with Party Gator. Namdi seemed like a natural choice for a multiple personality record like this one, since he's one of the most restlessly engaging musicians working right now. The Chicagoan's latest album, Please Have a Seat, was his first for Secretly Canadian, and it's a blistering mix of hip-hop, electronic music, trap, and lots more, all tied together by his voice and outlook. Also in this chat is Detroit's Kwale Chris, who's been making records as a rapper, producer, and writer for the past decade plus. His latest album, Death Fame, also came out last year, and it's a smart, politically pointed collection of songs that showcases both his incredible flow and sense of humor. Again, makes perfect sense that Acaster would have called on him to bring something special to Party Gator. Let's check out one of the album's tracks that features all three of these guys. Here's a bit of a song called Kept. In this fun and insightful conversation, these three guys talk about collaborating long distance, how whoever's mixing an album is incredibly important, whether or not one should order cheesecake at Cheesecake Factory, and how Macklemore ruined thrift stores, allegedly. Enjoy.
I'm at my sister's house in D.C., so I'm, like, not even at home.
Oh, Kwale is, like, nearby.
Oh, you're in D.C.?
No, I'm in Baltimore.
Oh, nice. I'm about to be in Baltimore tonight. Going on a hot date!
I was about to say swing by, but swing by one of these other nights.
Now I'm excited. Now I want you guys to meet up.
We actually met recently.
Yeah?
Like, a couple months ago, because you played with Black Midi at Talia Hall. And I was going to see them, and I saw you perform, and it was incredible. And I met you after the show when I was just
hanging out. That show was killer.
How was that tour?
The tour was crazy. I mean, those fucking Black Midi guys, they're insane. Insane.
They're like my favorite boy band. I toured with them too, and it's like they're literally a boy band. People will bring pictures of them to the shows for them to sign. It's like, oh, who's your favorite Black Midi member?
They deserve every bit of it.
Oh, yeah.
So there was no part of me at like whatever, 22, 23, 20, whatever. I mean, even when they first like kicked on the scene, there was no part of me that was that committed to anything.
Yeah, same.
And their technical skill alone, it's a marvel every night. Or every night. Now that you say that, when they come back through, or when I see them again, I'm going to bring a picture of us and see if they can sign it too.
Well, their audiences react to you guys when you supported them on your separate tours?
Mine was good. I feel like the crowd was like so pumped to see them that they were just happy. Like you could have done anything. You made any silly joke and everyone was like, yeah, because they're so pumped to see Black Midi.
Yeah,
and it's like a younger crowd too, which means they buy merch and like stay for the whole show. Not like us old friends who are just like, it's 9 p.m. My feet hurt.
Yeah, I was on my house shoes and he was stunned. I was, you know, well, he had pointed out that when, like, I would be like, you know, throw your hands in the air, they would keep them up for the entire song. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I wouldn't do that.
It was beautiful. I don't know what I have to do to get a fan base like this.
It's crazy.
Made me want to write a mean letter to my fan base. Like, what if we get it together? Get it the fuck together, because this is real.
It's funny because I love when people do that and I participate and throw their hands up, but I would never. I'm just so stubborn in regards to everything. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, you
when people do it for me, I'm like, yes. But I, at a show, if someone tells me to raise my hands up, I'm like, nope.
Nah.
It reminds me of like growing up in church too, where people made you do that and I wasn't into it then. So mm-hmm. I think like just like me being stubborn mixed with like past religious experiences mm-hmm. makes me be like, nah. It's gone to a point where even when things are good, sometimes I try to go in the opposite direction. If there's like a lot of people doing a thing, even if people are like, this is a great show, and I know it's like a show I'll like I'll put off watching it just because so many people are into it. It's like not a great mentality
yeah.
because it could be people running from a fire and everyone's like, yo, let's run this way. And I'm like, nah, I'll stay here.
Nah.
Sometimes it feels good though. I went to see Serpent with Feet. In London, and at the end of the set they were doing one of my favorite songs, and they were singing the chorus, and they were singing the chorus over and over again, and it's like the same lyric over and over, and they said, I want everyone to sing along, and if you want to stop singing, that's fine, but this is the last song, so if you stop singing, you go home. And I'm gonna keep singing this song until there's like one person left, and we're just going to keep going until everyone's had enough and everyone goes. And literally when they got to the end of the sentence, I went, cool, bye. And I went home. And it was, yeah, I love the song. I loved the whole night. I love everything that Serpent with Feet puts out. But I didn't want to sing because I don't like singing with everyone. And it actually felt really good to just go, oh, I'm going to go home now. There were some people so into it, singing really loud, clearly, passionately. I was like, I'm just going to be that mumbling guy who just wants to stay and keep watching, but I just feel awkward. And it was quite nice to just accept, I'm going to go home.
Some people have the ability to like lose themselves in performances and art like that easier than performers, because I think performers are, our brains are like just set to like critique things in ways maybe other people aren't. And just to like kind of like learn, like, oh, what can we take away from this? And like, what are they doing? You know, like sometimes it's hard to see music without like picking it apart and just like be fully present. Same for comedy too.
Yeah.
It's hard for just to like, okay, I'm just going to thoroughly enjoy this and not be like, oh, that was really good. That was a really good joke. Or like this dissect things like that.
Yeah. Always picking it apart, studying. I almost feel the opposite when I'm at shows because like part of me like enjoys being a part of it. But then also there's like, I think like performer's karma that I'd be worried about. Like if somebody's like, throw your hands in the air or make noise, like I feel like I have to, because I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm like paying tribute to like the show gods or whatever. Mm-hmm. And being like, you know, now when I step on stage, this will be returned to me tenfold or whatever.
I feel like if it comes organically, then I'm all for it. But I just, yeah, if it feels like processed or like, I don't know, just don't like being told what to do. But sometimes I'm just doing that anyways. I'm dancing. If I like it, I'm grooving. If I like it, I'm there and present.
I didn't even think about the church thing because, oh, damn, I used to hate that shit. Like, everybody stand. Everybody, you know, and then there'd be that one person, that one, you know, elder or whatever, that if you weren't singing, they would like, you know, depending on the church, either like front you out in front of everybody, or if anything, like send you some sort of laser stare from across the room.
Ugh. Oh yeah, I hate that shit.
I went to like a non-denominational kind of like in a community center. Mm. Everyone kind of put in quite an informal church as a kid, and like a series of those as a kid, and wasn't aware that they were like a bit darker than I knew they were. I thought they were just very positive, very happy churches. I didn't know that there were, you know, leaders being a bit too controlling of everybody. I think there was one week where they told the congregation, if everyone who wears glasses doesn't wear glasses for a week, then we've been told by God that next week you're all going to be cured. And and then the following week, everyone got like an absolute dressing down from the leaders, because they were like, well, some of you have been wearing glasses because we haven't all been cured. So who was it?
Oh, grade A gaslighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucked up, man, because you should have, if y'all didn't wear the glasses, y'all be good.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You'll never know.
That test gave you a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
I've still got 2020, so I'm fine.
Imagine that, people walking around like Mr. Magoo falling off ledges and stuff because they told them not to wear glasses.
There's people getting awful headaches, like all week their heads are killing them because like they were doing it. And then other people had like, you know, buckled once and put the glasses on and now they're to carry this guilt that thanks to you.
I was like Baptist mostly. Like, but I went to a Catholic school as a kid. They tried to give me a paddling. I remember my mom was like, "Oh fuck no!" And didn't let that shit happen. And then I guess that was when I left that school. But then I went to a Lutheran high school. Lutheran church days were very, yeah, right? Isn't that crazy? Were very. Very mundane in comparison to the Baptist joints. But no, we were pretty much standard, you know what I mean? The standard Baptist church they put in every, you know, black comedy. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, the ones that Macklemore and shit go to for you know, emotional songs. At the
Oh my God. I was listening to Thrift Shopping yesterday, honestly. I kind of went in with that.
This is something I heard online. So clearly, I admit I did no research on this subject. So I don't know if it's true or not. But I saw some shit online that was saying the general pricing in thrift stores right now, being as expensive as it is in large part to the popularity of that song.
Damn, fuck Macklemore.
When that song
came out. All my homies hate Macklemore, fuck Macklemore.
He gentrified the thrift shop. I definitely think like going to a church as a kid, as much like, you know, I don't believe in any of that stuff now, but like, I think being in a church where there was like people getting up and talking, there was people getting up and like, you know, playing songs, there's a lot of creative stuff going on. And I think that a lot of my kind of need to be like, on stage in front of people or making stuff was all kind of like born from there a little bit. Do you guys feel like that at all or not really?
I think a little bit. Both my parents are pastors and I'm Nigerian and like pretty much most Nigerian culture, it's like religion and spirituality is like ingrained into the culture. So like you're the odd man out if you don't participate in it because it's just like literally part of the culture. So I grew up in like different churches. My dad would preach at all sorts of denominations, mostly like Pentecostal, like speaking in tongues churches, but I would go to like Methodist, Baptist. He would teach at synagogues and stuff. He would teach everywhere. So I had a pretty eclectic religious experience growing up. And that's where like I started playing drums a bit in church, you know. I feel like a lot of people get their start doing that. So definitely it has like a good place, even though if I don't take away like a lot from it, it definitely like helped my performance. And also just seeing my dad be so confident in like his speech and stuff, I feel like I was like, you know, he's got something. Like I don't quite have it yet, but I feel like I could do that.
Oh well, yeah, he was basically on tour.
Oh yeah. Church to church. It's pretty wild. I think another thing I learned in regards to performance is how different chords and how different presentations of music can influence people's mood, you know, because the music in church is very made to like flow and like make you feel emotional and things. So I think that's something I picked on up early on. I was like, oh, this can be a tool to not necessarily manipulate, that may be the wrong word, but to kind of guide people's emotional experience. Like, and I learned that like in movies too, like take out the music in movies or shows and you have a completely different experience than like if the music that's supposed to like, oh, it's, you're supposed to feel sad here. So they have the somber music. We're having the tiny little violins playing like, oh, it's supposed to be upbeat. We're going to play some Morel or whatever, you know, like, I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from music in church is just like how much of an emotional accompaniment it can be.
It is, you know, manipulating, you know, utilizing all these different ways to essentially like conduct emotions. Cause like, you know, the pastor would start a certain way and you could like, the more you paid attention, you know, especially as I'm older, you know, now as I got older, you could like see him like, kind of like you will be on stage, like filling out like, oh, this isn't really hitting them. Let me pull out, you know, let me pull out this note and maybe like start speaking in a certain tone that starts to rile it up.
Well, yeah. Both of you do that a lot. So like in your songs and your music, you can both like inhabit a bunch of different characters with a bunch of different voices on one track. Is that like, is that the idea there? Is it like, let's guide people to how they're meant to feel, or are you just doing different perspectives and different voices, sometimes different characters?
I don't even ever look at it as different characters. Even folks that seem very very simple or, you know, are complex, you know what I mean? I just kind of just go with what feels best, and as long as it feels like me, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'll see this shit all the time where I'll be like, who would have thought it makes sense that James and Quelle would know each other? I'm like, what's weird about that?
A lot of people think in like just like square blocks, you know, like they're like, you're over here. Maybe James, you've experienced this a little, like doing this project too. People are like, you do this one thing. That's what we know you for. And it's just like anything else that you try to do in life, especially if you've like established yourself in one area, people will be like, ah, but do the thing that we know you for. And it's just like, life is long. Life is sometimes unbearably ridiculously long. So you're going to have many lives and many things that you're interested in. Hopefully, like, hopefully that's the goal as a human, is to like try different things. Cause like, if not, like, why else are we here? You're just going to do your one thing for fucking 80 years and then die? Fuck that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a nice problem to have. Like when we were making this, you know, over the internet together, as it grew more and more into a project and into an album, you know, I did start getting those concerns and being like, people aren't going to accept this from me. They're going to like want me to, maybe I should just put this out under a different name and not use my own name on it. But then I was like, no, because then if it sucks and it's bad, all you guys have got to take the hit because you put your real names on it. So that's not fair.
I appreciate that.
I kind of had to, in the end, just think like, do you know what? It's a good problem to have. And also, and kind of like trying to use what, because actually through stand-up, I've never really viewed it as like, my therapist asked me once and said like, do you identify as a comedian? Is that your identity? And it just wasn't at all. And I didn't know why. I've been doing it for 15 years and it was my, you know, main job. But I just didn't feel like it was, but I didn't know what else was. But I think just being creative in general. So instead of kind of doing this and going, I'm going to try and just get as far away from what I've done, you know, that comedian side of me has to be gone now so that I can be taken seriously in this thing. And actually not doing that was way better. Being like, no, I've kind of figured out who I am creatively as a comedian. And actually, you know, doing this now, which is something that I did before I even started comedy anyway, but like doing this, this is just the next project. I don't have to see myself as, okay, I was doing that. I'm a comedian and now I'm a musician. It's actually just still the same person making something.
You're just you.
Yeah.
You're just Jay.
You're still, you don't have to kind of go, I've got to make sure none of this is funny because otherwise, yeah, like, or this has to be funny because I'm a comedian. You said you just kind of go, we're just going to see what this is and we're just going to do it and what comes out and what it turns out to be. And it was a collaboration anyway. So that,
yeah.
Took a lot of the heat off of it as well as it being like something that had to represent me and me alone.
But that's what's going to make it good, is that, you know, I'm opening the door to all my homies and they're all just going to pour in and play or sing or do, you know, within the light constraints of the party gators tale, you know what I'm saying? Let it like open the playground. We're just going to come in and all figure it out.
It was so good getting like stems from you guys and like opening up my inbox and having something new to play with each day and stuff. And the thing is, like in a conversation like this, especially us kind of leading it ourselves, there's certain things like I don't want to ask that like I've always like, so never, what I didn't want to ask you at any point when you were sending me stuff was like, oh, how did you do this? And like, what's, because like, yeah, there's so much of it is like still a mystery to me. I'll be at home listening to it going, I don't know how they thought of this or how they thought to do this on this song. And this never would have occurred to me in 1,000 years, but like, I kind of don't want to ask, you know, I don't want to ask you guys when I sent you the stuff, how did you go about doing it? Even though like, that seems like I should be asking that. On a podcast, but like I almost don't want to know the answer. But
yeah, I'm the worst person to ask that type of stuff anyways, because I really don't have a process. Like Mm-hmm. I just do it and I keep tweaking it until it feels good to me. I just start and then go till it's done. That's mm-hmm. my process. Like I'd be the most boring on a music podcast because people would be like, so what were you thinking? And I was just like, I was thinking that I wanted the song to sound good and I wanted it to be done.
Hey, this is Josh Modell, host of the Talkhouse podcast. We love it when musicians come on the show and talk about process, and often they'll get into the nuts and bolts of being a working artist, which can sometimes be fun and sometimes feel more like a business. Well, this episode of Talkhouse is brought to you by DistroKid, which is an amazing service for musicians looking to get their songs out into the world in an incredibly smart and cost-effective way. For the past decade plus, DistroKid has made it easy to get your music on all the streaming services, including Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Instagram, and more. You keep 100% of your earnings minus a flat yearly fee, which is a better deal than you'll find anywhere else. More than a million artists use DistroKid, and the latest version of their app is better than ever. It includes features that make it easy to see your account details, including the money you've earned, as well as to seamlessly edit things like lyrics and metadata across platforms. There's even a feature called Instant Share, which allows you to easily share files with your bandmates, booking agent, playlist curators, and more. Distro Lock allows you to protect your songs. DistroKid users get a YouTube official artist channel, too. The list goes on. The DistroKid app is available on iOS and Android. Go check it out today.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
Hey, Talkhouse listeners, it's Josh Modell. Instead of encouraging you to listen to podcasts today, I'm here to encourage you to read something great. The particular something I have in mind is the second issue of the Talkhouse Reader, the print zine spearheaded by our fantastic music editor, Annie Fell. This issue is focused on the intersection of food and music, and it features contributions from Maddie Matheson, Coleman Domingo, Squirrel Flower, Sam Evian, The Blessed Madonna, and more. There are pieces about eating while on tour, the gentrification of food, cooking as a creative catalyst, and much, much more. You can order a copy today, along with the first issue, at store.talkhouse.com. Please do check it out.
You two both also wear a bunch of different creative hats and do a bunch of different things. Is that like important to you as well, to not get, is a way of not getting bored, and like so that you can just like focus on the project and not overthink it too much when you're, you know, like you say, you kind of think, I just want this to sound good and be done. And then you're able to kind of like go on to another, yeah, you know, and then you're able to go do a project where you play a completely different role in it. It's a completely different genre of music. Or Quella, you might go on to something and you're doing like animation for something, or like, you know,
yeah.
Does it help to approach each project and not overthink it too much because you're just constantly doing something different?
Yes and no. Like, I think you, like, one, I focus on like way too many projects. So I just find myself doing a bunch of shit a lot of times. But two, I do, you know, I think not over focusing on like the process or being like, okay, it's got to be this or it's got to be that, does help for me when mm-hmm. I'm playing shit or when I'm putting songs together. It's like kind of following this natural trail, you know?
Mm.
And I just kind of like smoke. I just kind of flow with where it's going. You know what I mean? But like, even with your songs, you were sending like some notes that were helping a lot. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, you gave different emotions and whatnot. So that would help. And then, you know, in the same way, just whatever was happening in my life just also was just falling right in that place. So when you were sending songs, I would sit and ride to some for a little while, but then it would hit. And then once it hits, you just go with it, you know?
Yeah. Is it similar for you, Nambi? I get the impression Nambi doesn't like talking about the creative process too much.
No, I love talking about it, but sometimes it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what I was thinking during times, because it's mm-hmm. in a way it's like kind of spiritual and meditation for me, because I sometimes feel like I black out and a song is done. Like I just will work on something and, you know, kind of self-edit as I go. I think just from the music and the things that I heard from an early age, like I was into like a lot of weird out there stuff that a lot of people I knew weren't into. And it just gave me the perception that, like, there are so many options, like, and not in a debilitating way for me either. Like, some people are like, oh, there's too many choices. I was like, yo, I could literally do anything like on a song and it would be, it could be interesting. So I think having that perspective and, like you're saying, wearing many hats, I don't have a problem finishing things, because music for me sometimes is more, like, I'm more obsessed than I am disciplined. People are like, how did you get so good at drums? I was just like, I'll just be playing drums for 15 hours a day in my room. Like, it wasn't like, it wasn't discipline, because discipline, like, I would still be doing it like daily.
You just opened something up with that statement. I'm more obsessed than I am disciplined. That's it right there.
Honestly, if you learn how to balance those things, like, it can be good for you. I have a friend, Marina Herlop. She's like one of my favorite musicians, best musicians on the planet to me. And we had like kind of interesting conversations because she's from Barcelona and we're talking about just like American culture. And she was like, you Americans are doing things because they're fun. And she's just like, I just practice every day and I do it. And I don't wait for inspiration or creativity. It'll come, but I'll have like the tools where it'll come more easily because I'm just so fluent at what I do. And I was just like, I think I've got to that point, but I did it in a completely different way. I did it like out of a point of obsession rather than discipline. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. And I think doing this project was good for me because it was at a time where, yeah, I just had so much time and didn't know what to do. It was like deep lockdown. So like, you bringing this to me was like a gift. I was like, oh, I can try something different. I've literally never felt this way. So this music that I make, I don't think I'll ever be able to make something like this again, because this is like such a unique feeling globally. Mm-hmm. And having your input, like when I would send something and you'd be like, you know, let's try this part screaming, or like, you know, I feel like I sent you so much and I really appreciated like the edits, because having the self-edit for me sometimes, that's the hardest part. Like, there's never like a lack of creativity. It's like taking pieces out and being like, okay, like what needs to be there. So yeah, that was my favorite parts about the collaboration, was like getting notes, because a lot of times people don't send me notes. They're like, oh, that's sick.
You have to assume that's what people want, like, and then hope that they do. And if anyone, I mean, no one got, you know, pissy with me every time whenever I gave notes, but like I was kind of prepared for like, if anyone does, then yeah, I'll just leave it. And that, yeah, I won't want to push it with anyone. I'm very grateful that anyone's like contributing to this at all. But I always find it more fun if I'm doing something, if someone says like, hey, try it more like this, let's do it like that. You know, yeah. I'm kind of looking for this thing. And most of the time, you know, and also I'd check with people if I was going to use their stuff in a different way. Most of the time, like I remember with you, Namdi, there was a bit where I was like, I'm going to do this a cappella now at the beginning and not put the drum beat on it. And
I was, so well, good. That's well, my
I
favorite.
Should, I should check.
It's such a good choice, though.
You were doing some real life producing and you were killing it. You were killing it. And, you know, I think people may have probably even had more to say if, like, your ideas weren't great or didn't work, you know, every time. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
There were some times when it's like, and again, just really useful when like I'd send people back, you know, here's what I've done with you. Especially if I'd changed it in any way, if I'd like moved it to a different part of a song or chopped it up, I'd send it back to the person just to be like, this is what I've done. And, you know, sometimes they would be like, I wouldn't do it like that personally. You do what you want, is your album, but like I would personally try this. So then I'd try the thing they did. And a lot of the time, I'll be like, oh yeah, they're right, we've got there and found the thing. And again, it's like that thing where, like you were saying earlier, you just want it to be the best it can be. You know, it's not about ego. And also, like, I remember, Quelle, you saying to me about the, it was, you know, a very polite and nice little kind of comment of saying like, you know, this is going to be really hard to mix, just so you know. And it was really helpful because I was like, I didn't know that. I thought that the hard bit was going to be this, was going to be producing it and making it. And I thought mixing it would just be, I'll just do some bits louder and some bits quieter. I don't know.
So many of these songs, like if you mix them even slightly different in different directions, it's a completely different song. You know what I mean? So like there's so much of these pieces that are about like, what is the focal point at this point? Along with all the other pieces going on at the same time in some cases. you know. So yeah, no, the mixing had to be brutal, but y'all made it through.
I was in there for a long time, but it was a good time as well. I liked it. It ended up being one of my favorite parts of the whole thing. And although I remember listening to the first pass I did and being absolutely distraught, thinking, "Oh, I've wasted everyone's time. This is the worst thing I've ever heard," because I mixed it too much top end, everything just too harsh, all in the same kind of place. I was like, "This is awful," and had to like go back in, start again, do it all again.
It makes such a crazy difference. Mixing is an instrument in of itself.
I was going to say,
the
fifth Beatle. Mixing,
yeah, Chris Hamilton is the fifth Beatle in this case, or the 41st Beatle, because of how many people are in this. But like, a guy called Chris Hamilton, who I've known for a long time, and we had a good time doing that together. Yeah, I mean, what's crazy? People always ask me like, if I'm happy to know that you guys have met now, because like, a lot of people ask me like, you know, how many of these people even know each other on the album. And it's nice that like certain people now have like started working together who didn't know each other before this.
I'm about to go on this date with Dominic and tonight, you know what I'm saying?
Where are we about to eat at?
It's going down. We're going to Cheesecake Factory. Now.
Hey, let's go. Honestly, never been. Would love to go. My birthday's tomorrow, so.
Oh, if you two go Cheesecake Factory for Numbie's birthday, I'll be the happiest guy.
Happy. So funny. I'll do it just for the story.
As a Brit, I just know more about American culture than maybe I thought I did. And like a lot of stuff that I was excited about seeing in America when I went there for the first time. I went to San Francisco and I just wanted to go to a Cheesecake Factory because I'd heard it mentioned in the film Step Brothers. So I was like, that Cheesecake Factory sounds cool, where that guy is going, where Richard Jenkins is going. So I was like, I wanted to find a Cheesecake Factory in San Francisco, and I went there. And my kind of like conscience wouldn't let me just go in and get a cheesecake. I had to like have the main course first in order to earn my dessert. which I really regret because I ordered the meatloaf and it was like the size of my head. Like it was huge. Jesus. I was full up on meatloaf and then this cheesecake, I'm having to force it down. And it still doesn't sit well with me that I did Cheesecake Factory wrong. Like that's
Listen, the way you did Cheesecake Factory wrong is that you got cheesecake. Because like if you're really doing Cheesecake Factory, you go in, you're eating a bunch of bread, you're eating a shitload of the brown bread, and then you order like a pasta, and like you said, they bring it out in like a trough. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like you get like a lifetime supply of pasta. For whatever dumb reason, you eat it all, and you know you're gonna feel like shit afterwards. You save enough to bring some home to at least feel a little civil, and you never order cheesecake.
That's the first thing I would order too. Like it's in the name. I just thought they put cheesecake on everything. They're like, salad comes with cheesecake on it. Meatloaf comes with cheesecake on it.
that is like the culinary version of one of your albums. Though. That could very much be.
Just throw it all on there.
It's a bunch of different, completely different dishes, but everyone has cheesecake on it somewhere.
They just bring you the menu and they're like, what don't you want?
So are you guys working on anything at the minute? Are you collaborating with anyone new? I mean, because as much as I would love to carry on talking about the album that we did together, like it's weird. It feels weird asking you questions about the album that I asked you to do. I guess it's not, but like...
The album slaps. It's also so fresh. Like it literally just came out. So sick.
It is very exciting that because like having it just... So obviously for me, so I started playing drums when I was 7 and I became obsessed with albums when I was 7 as well. That was like the thing in music that for whatever reason was what excited me. And when you're talking about like discipline and obsession, I was like, I was obsessed with making albums. I really had to discipline myself to practice the drums. And actually making this was all obsession all day. There were loads of actual, you know, comedy work things that I had deadlines for that I didn't do because I was obsessed with doing this and just wanted to do it all the time. So yeah, when you said that earlier, I was like, yeah, that's like exactly how this, like I've had to learn discipline in so much, especially when it comes to like writing, if I've written books or writing a stand-up show. But like with this, it was just obsessed and wanting to do it as soon as I woke up and not going to bed until late because I was up, you know, messing around with the stems and whatnot. But like when it got released, you know, this is what I've been thinking about. You know, I'm 38 now, so like you know, got 31 years of like imagining doing this. And it was a way more intense experience than like I was prepared for, just because I think I had, you know, thought about it for so long and imagined it for so long. I'm feeling a lot more chilled out about it now, and just so glad it's out there.
Yo, question. I saw a video from your release party. Was Finn Wolfhard there?
You know, it was.
Funny. I met him on a tour. I was touring with this band, Twin Peaks, that like recorded his band, and he was hanging out backstage, which was very funny. It was just funny watching people interact whenever they saw his face, like, peek out the side. And people were like...
We just did a film together, and like I just did my last day on it yesterday, actually. So and so did he. So but like yeah, it was the launch party for the album was during the filming, and I didn't really think any of the cast would come necessarily. I said, you know, this is going on, and a bunch of them came down, and a lot of people were very surprised. We kind of did the main launch party, which was, you know, a Q&A with the audience, with the people who had bought the album. And we showed them all the videos that we'd made, because we did a video for every song, and did some, you know, sign-ins after. And then across the road for the after party.
It looked never so happened. Fun. I was like seeing the videos being like, damn, that looks fun.
Yeah, it was good. Have you guys had any reactions to like since the album came out? Have you had it? Because it's weird me not being on social media at all. I don't know if anyone's like spoke to you about the album.
I have a couple that hit me up about it and were really, really excited. Yeah, I think people were excited that so many people that they liked were on the same album, which is really cool.
But when we did the If I Could Just video, which is the one that I used footage of everyone for, and thanks guys for sending it, because you sent in some iPhone footage each and like we were able to use it. And Nanda, you had like a blue monster head on for yours.
Yeah.
And I've seen that in photos of you on stage live as well. And like, what is that? Where's that come from?
It came... So I did a music video for a track on my last album, Anti. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to recreate... There's this viral video of Elmo, like a bootleg Elmo in the hood. And he's like playing a marching snare drum. And like all these kids are like dancing around him. And it's like just one of my favorite videos. I don't know why. It's so silly and dumb. And I kind of just wanted to recreate something similar. So I had my friends buy this. It was actually supposed to be a Sonic the Hedgehog costume. And it came with a mask that looked so absolutely fucked up. And they made it look even more fucked up, because I was like, I want it to look like Cookie Monster. So they kind of chopped off the eyes and replaced them with styrofoam balls. And it's just a funny thing I put in a music video that I'm obsessed with, and I bring it everywhere now.
Yeah. It's funny, those things just become like you make it for something, and then it just becomes, obviously, you know, I did it for this and made, got the party gator outfit made and got the little puppet made of the baby gator as well. And it just suddenly... You don't really know why you're drawn to something, and then you kind of make sense of it at the end. With something, you'll look back at some point and realize why that furry mask with the big eyes is important to you.
It just feels right. It makes it, I look at it and it makes me feel good, and I'm just like, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Talkhouse podcast, and thanks to James Acaster, Namdi, and Kwale Chris for chatting. The record is credited to Temps, and it's called Party Gator Purgatory. If you like what you heard, please follow Talkhouse on your favorite platform and check out all the goodness at talkhouse.com. This episode was produced by Myron Kaplan, and the Talkhouse theme is composed and performed by The Range. See you next time.